last week's Vancouver Province, always the newspaper of record, has this fabulous headline in the main section. Buy Corolla, hello Hummer. That's right, the province has awarded yet another lease on a brand new Hummer H3 to a lucky contestant. But it turns out this young lady was driving around town in a beat-up Corolla, which perhaps got 40 or 35 miles to the gallon at least in the city, for a Hummer which gets, well, you know, they get the worst.
I don't even know how many miles it gets to the gallon.
And isn't that just what we need while the war in Iraq's being fought over oil? While we have all sorts of terrorism involved? And while climate change threatens us in a way that hardly any of us have woken up to. Yes, the province is right behind and right on the ball for their own news stories reporting that the Arctic is melting, that the species are disappearing, that the climate is changing.
Shit, the whole polar ice cap's melting.
Well, what do they have to say? Jamie Pitblado, the Vice President of Promotions and Community Investment for the province, says, well, based on the reaction of our readers, it looks like we'll have to keep on doing it.
Muttering something about he's so selfish, the hatred is evident, the Hummer is heaven sent. Best of all, I'll write it off, thanks, Mr. President. I spend what I need on the rims and the trim, and I can speed across the country on a whim. I can move any mountain, I can ford any stream, jerk the tires in the parking lot to let off steam.
He's a rich guy.
And that, my friends, is why we need Co-op Radio to get an alternative point of view. And that is why we need Radio EcoShock, your brand new one-hour program every Friday on the environment and about these challenges like global climate change. And this is Alex Smith, your co-host for Radio EcoShock. We've got a program jam-packed with the latest news, awful truth, and local solutions. Coming up in this week's program, flying is killing us, dire predictions of climate tipping from top scientist James Lovelock, the inventor of Gaia, plus what BC unions are learning about the impact of climate change on jobs, a whirlwind tour to get public input that Stephen Harper doesn't want, and field recordings of young activists getting their say. We've got a couple of great prizes today for co-op listeners. A group called City Green are leading a series of workshops to provide tools for a sustainable future. These are really cool ways to save money and do something for the planet. For example, tomorrow at Langara College, the workshop is on solar hot water heating. How to do it for your own place. September 30th, it's net metering and renewable energy. There's four more, including one on wind energy and another on reducing your heating bill. You can find out more on their website at citygreen.ca. We've got free workshop passes to give away to the first two callers. You must be a Co-op Radio member to win. If you're not a member, it's easy. We'll sign you up right on the phone. Your membership will cost a lot less than the workshop entrance, so you get the course and you support alternative media. My friendly control room operator, John Pranger, is standing by to take your calls at 604-684-7561. That's 684-7561. So call in now and win a free workshop. In the news, California is suing GM, Ford, Toyota, and three other car makers for all the new costs arising from global warming. As reported by Bloomberg on September 20th, the state says car makers are a public nuisance because they make vehicles that emit teratons of greenhouse warming gases. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer said, "Vehicle emissions are the single most rapidly growing source of carbon emissions contributing to global warming. Yet the federal government and the automakers have refused to act." End quote. Amy Lund-Lewers, a climate researcher with the Union of Concerned Scientists, one of the groups backing the lawsuit, said, "Rising temperatures are threatening California's economy, health, and environment. Changes are already underway. Automakers are contributing to global warming today." When the big three American automakers decided to make gas guzzlers instead of fuel-efficient vehicles, they became climate criminals. I said that. In local news, late Tuesday night, union reps at the Vancouver and District Labor Council heard a mind-numbing speech from one of their own researchers, Cliff Walker of the BC Government and Service Employees Union, the BCGEU. We're going to play a few clips from that speech during the program, and you can listen to the whole presentation or download it from our website at www.ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock, like an electric shock, .org. For one thing, we learned once again that air travel is a major factor threatening our planet. No, it's not the terrorists with nasty liquids in their hair gel bottles. It's us, the business travelers and holidaymakers. Walker quotes an eye-opening article by George Monbiot for the Independent newspaper in the UK on February 26, 2006. It's titled, "We Fly, We Die." Easy to Google that. The British government is building new airports at a world-burning pace, despite evidence from their own top scientists that air travel injects tremendous amounts of greenhouse gases directly into the upper levels of the atmosphere, just where it shouldn't be. Here's Cliff Walker from the Union Hall. Well, thank goodness we're not so foolish. Oh, wait, we are. The Vancouver Sun business section for September 18th, 2006 has a glowing rah-rah feature titled YVR, well, that's the nickname for the airport, looks to double cargo. Freight surge is expected due to the boom in China. They need to double their facilities for all this air traffic, they say. In 2005, big planes hauled in about 250,000 tons, mostly consumer goods, and they expect to fly in twice as much, 500,000 tons, by 2027. Lots of new planes to zip over the city and pollute the air. Hasn't anyone told them about the inconvenient truth?
The Arctic is experiencing faster melting. If this were to go, sea level worldwide would go up 20 feet.
Airplanes inject 30 times more carbon into the atmosphere per ton for each kilometer traveled than shipping by boat. Airplane exhaust and all the greenhouse gases associated with the industry were left out of the Kyoto Accords by the demand of the United States and the collusion of Europe. It's a giant fraud. We perpetrate on ourselves, but nobody can fool Mother Nature. When the greenhouse gases go up, so does the planet's temperature. Two recent stories on the Environment News Service, ENS, bear that out. From their September 20th headlines, European scientists are stunned by new satellite images from just last month, showing huge openings in the Arctic ice pack. Quote, "The ice had retreated to such an extent that a ship likely could have sailed from northern Siberia or the Norwegian island of Spitsbergen to the North Pole without difficulty," the scientists said. Yeah, you can sail right to the North Pole now. In another article from yesterday, U.S. scientists have released a study showing Greenland is melting much faster than previously imagined. The loss accelerated from 2004 to 2006, 2.5 times faster than expected. The new study was published in the current issue of the journal Nature by researchers with the University of Colorado at Boulder. The awful truth is, the Vancouver airport crew need to drop this model of endless economic expansion and draw up plans to reduce air traffic to a dribble. After all, as Chris Walker told his union people, when Greenland glaciers melt, likely in this century, the whole airport will go underwater anyway. By then, as James Lovelock is about to tell us, it will be way too late for us and all the species.
Here in Philadelphia, the temperatures are expected to climb
above 100
degrees
today for the first time. And for many, inescapable.
In 5 years. And with the humidity, it's going to feel like 110. Very dangerous here in Philadelphia.
All over Germany, where dramatically high temperatures have made this July the second hottest since 1901. And the heat wave that's currently sweeping over the whole of the European continent.
A heat wave that began in the west built to a sweltering crescendo as it moved east.
Heat wave. Central Canada is baking, with Humidex readings in the high 40s. Will all those air conditioners bring on a brownout?
And folks, I'm here to tell you, none of those media reports mentioned the words global warming. In fact, sometimes we find out from the media that roasting in the summer heat that will kill people, hundreds of people, thousands of people around the world, is just a lot of fun.
Now, who cares if it's over 100?
So why not celebrate the 21st birthday of his
father? Today's my lucky day because it's 100 degrees plus.
Still there's no let up. France faces another stifling sleepless night and a blistering day.
This is Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock, and we're not going to pull any punches here. We may find out from James Lovelock that it's already too late to avoid catastrophic climate change. Maybe it's time to think about that property up in the Yukon, Alaska, Scandinavia, or Siberia. Let's find out.
The Earth's physical condition is seriously ill, he wrote, and soon to pass into a morbid fever that may last as long as 100,000 years.
James Lovelock sees much of the Earth becoming an arid wasteland by the end of this century.
The world, when it gets very hot, will not be able to produce anything like as much food as it does now. So, quite literally, billions of us are going to be faced with starvation. I suspect that people will be migrating towards the better, more comfortable regions of the Earth, like the Arctic Basin particularly. I'm told that President Putin actually said at a climate meeting, well, climate change is going to be good for Russia. It'll make Siberia a really flourishing and special place. And to an extent, he may be right.
It's warm in the Arctic as well. Too warm. There's way less ice than there should be.
We reckon in about 20 or 30 years, all of the floating ice in the Arctic, that's an area as big as the United States, will be melted, and you'll be able to take a sailboat to the North Pole. Now, that's pretty big change, and you can't really deny that.
The world is catching a fever.
Just who is this thundering thug who promises a billion dead? Like a self-genocide, a well-oiled genocide. He's a fellow of the Royal Society, a very British scientist. He has degrees in chemistry, medicine, biophysics, and papers in all of those fields. He invented the electron capture detector that showed pesticide residues were widely distributed almost everywhere, and it also was used to show the distribution of CFCs in the atmosphere, and his discovery led to the pioneering paper by Molina and Rowland that forecast and proved ozone depletion. Now at age 87, this pioneering scientist, inventor, and self-proclaimed environmentalist tells us that billions of us are doomed, that the climate is wrecked. Is he right this time?
He believes that as the century progresses, the temperature will rise 8 degrees centigrade in temperate regions and 5 degrees in the tropics.
I think there is a great danger that the system has reached a point where it will not go back, whatever we do. And to look at it at its least value, nearly all climate scientists are agreed that if we could stop all fossil fuel burning magically today, it would still take 1,000 or more years before things got back to normal. We, in a sense, have already changed the Earth far beyond its normal state, and it won't recover for quite a long time.
In a fossil-driven world, heat itself becomes a cause of more heat. Humans crank up the air conditioning, all fed by oil and coal-fired generating plants, the very sources of more global warming gases. If the cycle runs away uninterrupted, we'll all need machines to cool the dirty air. The outside, the environment, will be too hot for most animal life.
Air conditioners in overdrive are pushing power usage to record levels. In the control room for ISO New England, they're working to prevent the kind of heat-triggered blackout that crippled the Northeast in 2003.
Just when we need to use less and less energy per capita, we're gobbling up more and more. In 100-plus degree temperatures across America in July, demand hit 138,000 megawatts, breaking the previous record of 133,000 set in July of 2005. New electricity records were set in dozens of states, including New York, Texas, and California. In Canada, Ontario also beat the previous year's record use, soaking up 27,000 megawatts. Instead of conservation, cutting back to 1990 levels proposed by the Kyoto Protocol, North Americans are engaged in runaway energy use. The heat begets more heat. There were brownouts, blackouts, evacuations, and hundreds of heat-related deaths. Oh yes, and Mel Gibson got arrested for drunk driving. You heard about that.
We call ourselves the New Yorkers who want to aid the rapid rise of global warming.
On the second day of August 2006, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg declared a state of heat emergency. The famous lights of Times Square and the Empire State Building were turned off to conserve energy.
Keep your air conditioner going. Keep those light bulbs brightly glowing.
Let's look at what you say about the Earth's condition soon to pass into a morbid fever that may last as long as 100,000 years, and you predict that this will happen well within the current century. What level of certainty do you have for this?
Modestly high. It's based mainly on what happened to the Earth 55 million years ago. There was an accidental geological release into the atmosphere of somewhere over a million tons of carbon dioxide. And it caused a warm-up of 8 degrees Celsius in temperate regions and 5 degrees in the tropics, and it took over 100,000, possibly 200,000 years before this effect calmed down and things returned to normal again. Now, we've put into the air already about half that much carbon dioxide, and if we go on as we are in 30 years, we will have put in a million tons, which is in the same order as what happened that 55 million years ago. But much more serious than that, we have in the interval taken off the farmland about 40% of the natural ecosystems of the Earth that were being used to regulate climate. So it's in a much worse state than it was then. And in addition, the sun is now 0.5% hotter than it was 55 million years ago. Taking all this together, things look pretty grim.
Lovelock believes that personal efforts by each of us will lead to no solution at all. He thinks that big governments have to move and move fast, and he compares their current efforts, well, to the failures of Munich to stop Hitler in Nazi Germany.
I tend to regard the very serious and earnest attempts that have been made at meetings like Kyoto to avoid climate change by political action as very like the Munich meeting before World War II. It was run by good intentions, but almost wholly impractical.
So now we face the heat. On Monday, triple-digit temperatures literally smothered the country. And today will be worse. Every city from Oklahoma to New Hampshire is expected to soar into the 90s and higher. Some cities like Richmond, Virginia, Baltimore, and Newark will hit 103 degrees and feel like 115.
There's a tipping point at which heat-related illnesses and deaths can increase rapidly.
This is quite frightening. And the wind was very, very strong at the time, about 100 kilometers an hour, and very, very hot, like a hairdryer. It's a fact that it's getting warmer earlier every year, and I think we're going to have more and more fires. It's bound to happen again,
you know.
It's too late to change the course of events now. And for this reason, I think what we have to do to prepare our adaptation to the changes that's going to come. And they're going to require an immense amount of effort. And each nation will have to treat the problem according to its needs, rather than try and treat the whole problem globally, which is impossible. For example, in the British Isles, we'll have to worry about inundation, because sea level rise and fiercer storms will flood the small amounts of good farmland we've got in East Anglia in no time. We better start building dikes to stop it happening. And the same is true of London. We've got some protection there from the Thames Barrier, but it looks as if that's not going to hold up for too many more years.
Is it really too late? Could James Lovelock simply be wrong in his predictions? He's certainly been quite wrong before. Yes, his electron capture machine showed the growing burden of chlorofluorocarbons in the atmosphere, but in an article in the journal Nature in 1973, he concluded these CFCs constitute no conceivable hazard. In his later book, Homage to Gaia, Lovelock admits he appeared before the 1974 congressional hearing on CFCs as, quote, the principal witness for the industry's defense. He was totally wrong. Lovelock also acknowledges his push to remove English hedgerows to help the cattle industry was an ecological disaster. He writes, I regret to say I played a small part in this act of national ecocide. I loved the English countryside passionately, yet I was as thoughtlessly responsible for its destruction as was a greedy shareholder of an agribusiness firm. End quote. And Lovelock has blundered time and time again on the issue of nuclear power. He's been a passionate advocate of building plenty of nuclear reactors since the 1970s. This love of all things nuclear has led to remarkable errors from a scientist. For example, he continues to maintain that the Chernobyl nuclear power meltdown in the Ukraine caused only 45 deaths. The World Health Organization found Chernobyl caused tens of thousands of deaths, and studies by Greenpeace and others, including looking at the way that thyroids were damaged, conclude that hundreds of thousands will die prematurely due to Chernobyl radiation. But Lovelock still sticks to just 45 deaths. He's so pro-nuclear that one interviewer reports Lovelock ready to keep a suitcase of nuclear waste in his garden shed, just to show how safe it is, even with his grandchildren around. Writing in the Daily Telegraph of 2001, Lovelock called the dangers of nuclear power imaginary. He appears at nuclear industry forums leading the cheering section. We also have to keep in mind Lovelock's long-standing position in the upper realms of the British establishment. While working for Shell in the 1970s, he often met with the controlling owner, Lord Rothschild. Like some others in the British upper class, including Prince Charles, Lovelock may consider Earth's population is far too great, a threat to the environment and wealth as well. So his vision of billions of humans dying off from climate-driven hunger in this century may express his own desires.
I don't doubt that the probability that billions may die before the end of this century is quite high.
He's also been involved with the CIA and MI5 and developed applications and inventions for the military. So Lovelock has his own agenda and blind spots. When it comes to the new heat age, Lovelock arrives as both a scientist and environmentalist. His claims are based on the worst-case scenario developed by the scientists on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. But it is still possible, if we act strongly within the next 5 or 10 years, that the worst may not happen. Although, given the coal-fired industrialization in Asia and the climbing record gas-slurping in North America, We don't see any action yet.
The punishing heat blanketing the eastern half of the U.S. is turning ordinary situations dangerous.
The news guy wept and told us was really dying. Cried so much his face was wet. Then I knew he was not lying. I heard telephones, opera house, favorite melodies. I saw boys, toys, electric irons and TVs. My brain hurt like a warehouse. It had no room to spare. I had to cram so many things to store. Everything in there.
The heat index in New York City could get up to 114 today. All across the East Coast, residents are being urged to set their air conditioners at 78, not to use their dishwashers or washing machines in the middle of the day.
The supply of food and fuel from abroad that we depend on a great deal on our island, but for us, that supply is going to start drying up before long because of climate change.
And as George Monbiot says, we won't be able to afford international trade because of the cost of shipping, the cost of fuel.
Exactly. He's absolutely right. And so we've got to do everything to go back to a World War II condition of being self-sufficient.
Busker Satchel Adams chose to look on the brighter side.
I've never been in hotter times than these, I don't think. It's a great time to sing.
It's, again, I keep repeating this, a wake-up call to make people realize how bad things are. I'm not trying to imply there's nothing we can do. I don't know whether cutting back fuel burning and emissions will do as much as is often claimed. It may be that we've reached a point, and in systems you do reach a point, where it will just proceed of its own accord to a final hot state, regardless of what we do. I don't know. This is a real danger that's there, and we must take it into account. We'd be irresponsible if we didn't.
You've been listening to interview clips with James Lovelock, taken from Late Night Live, produced by ABC Australia, as well as a BBC 4 production. There's also news clips from ABC, CBS, and CBC News, and Deutsche Welle's Living Planet. This report is from Radio EcoShock, that's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org. It's free environmental radio, 24/7, tune in. And we fade out with the amazing David Bowie from his 1970s album, where he said we only had 5 years. He was wrong then, is he right now?
We got 5 years.
You're listening to the all-new Radio EcoShock on CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Earlier we heard snippets from Hummerman by Andy Sloan. Now let's lighten up a bit with Vancouver Island's own Shane Phillip singing See You in the Sun from his album Earthshake.
And then it falls, just like us. And the wind is changing, nothing stays the same except us. Ooh, we gotta work together, gotta help each other, gotta make each other better. Life's for. I wanna see you in the sun. together, dance together. And that's what this life's for. I wanna see you in the sun.
Labor Day weekend, Tofino, located right in rainforest country on Vancouver Island, ran out of water. Well, think about that. It always rains now and then on that Pacific coast. It's hard to predict whether you'll be surfing in the sun or walking drenched in a slicker on the Long Beach. This summer, the rain never came, and Tofino tourist operators had to send people away due to lack of common drinking water. When the rainforest runs dry, as it did last year in the Brazilian Amazon too, you know the climate is changing. Further east, folks in the Okanagan and even the Kettle Valley next door were buried in nasty smoke every day. The sun kind of disappeared behind a brown cloud that blanked out nearby hills as well. Satellite pictures showed brown, smoggy plumes coming from record fires in Washington State and the whole U.S. West, floating over southern B.C. and even into Alberta. Of course, the western states had no rain to speak of for 87 straight days. But the fires had mountainsides of dry tinder from whole pine forests killed off by the pine bark beetle. If you've driven through Manning Park, you've seen swaths of dead red pine trees. The whole southern interior of British Columbia is filled with dying pines. We can expect years of fires. Now a BC government botanist, Richard Hebda, is questioning whether these forests will survive at all. Will they even return? They may become desert and grasslands, wiping out the economy and scores of interior towns that depend on logging and sawmills. If you want a peek into the future, look up the article by Terry Glavin, published in the Globe and Mail April 22, 2006. In a speech at the Maritime Labor Center on September 19th, union scientist Cliff Walker passed on this threatening news. He also showed slides prepared for the union showing the impact of rising seas on the lower mainland. Predictably, large parts of Richmond disappeared, along with the airport. But U.S. top climate scientist Jim Hansen of NASA says we might experience sea level rise up to 25 feet in this century, in the lifetimes of people now living. Finally, Walker called for a concerted effort, using all the organizing power that unions have developed, to help prevent the worst impacts of climate change and even massive social change. We can't really do justice to this speech by ripping a few clips out of context. I hope we can play longer portions in coming programs, and we'll offer it as a download at the ecoshock.org website. Despite past differences, it's good to hear unions are joining coalitions with environmental groups and other socially aware organizations to work on the big challenge of our times.
We know, I've said for a long time, we're not going to be able to achieve the Kyoto targets in Canada. That's just a fact. I'm sorry we lost a decade finding that out.
Whatever happens, it is up to us.
That guy scares me more than anything that's down there.
The so-called new government of Canada is making us looking pretty schizophrenic. First, we have the biggest convention of climate authorities in the world, the Climate Convention, last December in Montreal. Then Stephen Harper grabs the reins of power only to announce that Canada's bailing out of the Kyoto Protocol to reduce greenhouse gases. And then he dumps more climate change programs. Peter Ronald is with the BC Sustainable Energy Association. Peter, what is going on now?
Well, it's a good question to ask Stephen Harper and Rona Ambrose, the Federal Minister of Environment. The Canadian leadership on Kyoto and climate change has obviously hit the skids with the change of government last year. The Conservative government is not just equivocating and hesitating, they seem to be actually acting in counterproductively to the goals of the international community to control greenhouse gas emissions and control climate change.
So, but they've announced they're going to have a new Made in Canada, and that, of course, appeals to our egos here in Canada. Why should we participate with the rest of the world and the rest of the climate experts? Is this going anywhere, really? Yeah, my question, I guess, relates to the new climate tour is happening because they're talking about
Correct.
Making a Made in Canada right. program, but we really don't have any input to it. They're not asking the public what they think about climate change.
You may have noticed that the federal government is all about sloganeering right now. So Made in Canada is a bumper sticker, the same way their new government logo is becoming a bumper sticker. They're not about policy, or at least they are, but they're covering it in a veneer of public relations and spin. Made in Canada plan is still a speculative venture. We haven't seen anything. We have not seen any public consultation on what a Made in Canada plan should be made of. If the government has so little interest in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and solving the climate change puzzle, they should say so. And there are many of us who have been working for a long time on those solutions. We'd like a kick at that can.
Now, your group and the Climate Action Network of Canada are getting together on a series of talks or public input. Can you tell me about that?
The Climate Action Network is an umbrella organization in Canada based out of Ottawa, and the BC Sustainable Energy Association is one of its many member groups. The Climate Action Network is touring Canada right now. They're visiting cities from coast to coast, and they were in Vancouver last night, Victoria the night before, and tonight they'll be on Salt Spring Island talking to British Columbians and Canadians generally about what a Made in Canada plan ought to look like. We will take the input that we receive at these sessions all across the country and roll it up into a report delivered to Rona Ambrose's desk later this fall.
So if people missed the workshops, is there some way they can still get their word in?
Yes, they can do that in a couple of ways. The BC Sustainable Energy Association has a dynamic website at bcsea.org, and you can provide input there. The climatetour.org is the website of the Climate Action Network, and they are receiving input as well.
I think they might be climatetour.ca, actually.
Thank you. That's correct.
Yeah.
Climatetour.ca is the website that the Climate Action Network has set up for this purpose, and everyone is warmly welcomed to provide input to the report that we will be preparing for the Conservative government.
And then, you know, this whole subject is so depressing. We're going to hear a radio piece on this show from James Lovelock saying that, well, it may be too late. But we are looking for people to get together and wake up and get going. Well, one of the things that I'm looking forward to is Guy Dauncey is going to be speaking at the 60th anniversary for the Van City event. And that's coming up this Monday, the 25th. And it's at the Italian Cultural Center. It's free. You just have to get a hold of Van City ahead of time and let them know you're coming. And
I've heard him speak. We have a 15-minute recording, for example, of him speaking at the Montreal Convention. And he's a really dynamic speaker, and he's put out this book called 101 Solutions to Climate Change. And that's the sort of information we're going to need a lot of, don't you think?
Guy Dauncey is the president of my association, and he and our organization generally are all about solutions. There are so many ways to be active right now positively and happily in pursuing solutions personally, politically, in the policy realm, but also practically through our everyday choices of transportation, heating, and lighting options. Guy Dauncey is a breath of fresh air, a real inspiration. I'm very proud to work with Guy. And Bill Reese will also be speaking on Monday night at this event. Bill Reese is from UBC and is the person who popularized the concept of ecological footprint. If all of us took seriously our inputs and our effect and tried to minimize our influence on the ecology, many small changes would make for a large avalanche of change. And I think we'd see some of these very intimidating problems, if not resolve, at least moderate. And that's what we're after right now with regards to climate change. We need to moderate and slow the implications of greenhouse gas emissions and global climate change.
Well, that's also what this program is about, and I hope you will tell other people about it, because we see a really big problem coming up for planet Earth right now, especially from climate change, but all the things that radiate out from it. So that's Radio EcoShock on CFRO 102.7 FM Co-op Radio. Well, Peter Ronald, thank you for talking with us again today. Can you give us the websites again?
The BC Sustainable Energy Association is at bcsea.org, and the climate tour tonight on Salt Spring and input for the Made in Canada consultation that we're conducting is climatetour.ca.
Well, thanks a lot, and that's a way for people to get their input and not wait for Mr. Harper, but to get going on this very important issue. Peter Ronald from the Sustainable Energy Association.
You're listening to CFRO 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Now we go to our co-host, Amber, over in Nanaimo. She has her own show called Altered Egos on CHLY-FM, Radio Malaspina. And it's about time we hear from some voices of the young people who are going to be affected by this climate change. And believe it or not, some of them are ready to do something about it. This is her feature called Making Waves. Coming up next week, back to school at the university. But are universities part of the solution or part of the problem? We talk to Professor Michael McGonigal with his new book called Planet U. We'll have another feature from Amber and perhaps even some more shocking news about the world situation. Join us next week at 1 o'clock Friday and every Friday at 1 o'clock for Radio EcoShock on CFRO 102.7 FM on your dial, Co-op Radio.